Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Many young Latinos living in the Southwest and along the borderlands don't often feel comfortable speaking Spanish, proper Spanish, whether or not they're fluent. An academic course teaches these students to embrace and preserve their cultural and linguistic practices. The Spanish as a Heritage Language program at the University of Texas at San Antonio is tailored to help students of all levels develop their unique language skills and transition it into real-world practicality. We're talking today with Stephanie Gonzalez, program director of the Spanish as a Heritage Language program at UTSA, and with Sylvia Fernandez, Assistant Professor of Digital and Public Humanities in the Spanish as a Heritage Language program. Stephanie Gonzalez explains who is a heritage learner.
A heritage learner is really just somebody who grew up exposed to Spanish. It doesn't necessarily mean that they speak it or feel confident speaking it, but they have a connection to the language. They were exposed to it in a natural environment, so in their home, in their community. That is the experience for a lot of our students here in San Antonio. When Sylvia and I came into UTSA, we wanted to rethink the program, and we wanted to really honor the legacy of heritage courses across the nation, but specifically also here in San Antonio, in South Texas. And we have modeled it through different, I guess, research-based, evidence-based advances in the heritage language field. There are some universities that are looking at critical language awareness, that are looking at the experience of U.S. Latinas and their linguistic realities, right, their practices, and modeling their programs after that. And we really wanted our program to focus on Spanish in Texas, Spanish in San Antonio. And so we started really thinking about, what does that mean? What do our students want to do with their languages? How do they see themselves reflected or not in our curriculum? So we started looking into doing different surveys. We worked with the current instructors to see, what are the practices that are happening? Maybe what do we need to adjust? What's working? What could we do differently? What can we try? So that's kind of what we have been doing these past 2 years.
And so, Sylvia, can you explain to us how a heritage learner might be approaching these courses as opposed to somebody who wants to take a Spanish language course, either, you know, for beginners or for native speakers? You see those all the times in universities. How does this course differ from that?
Yes, well, that's a great question. I was just reading a lot of the heritage speakers and learners are coming up with this idea that their Spanish is wrong, right? That they don't do well pronunciation, that the words that they use are not the correct ones. And the Spanish as a Heritage Language courses are pushing them to embrace the language that they learn in their homes, that their grandmothers pass to them, and the way that that Spanish has been connected and integrated to the English, to indigenous languages that make their unique identities. So through the different courses, we bring in cultural issues to discuss, to start creating consciousness how language is embedded in the history, in the culture, and how language can also provide them with skills to social change, to start opening spaces, not only just to learn a language, but to serve in the medical field. When a grandma goes to the doctor and says, "Ay, me duele la barriga," and the doctor is aware of la barriga and how to send to them a response that the grandma will feel identify rather than outside of that medical space. So throughout the different courses that we're offering, we're bringing different issues of culture, of history, that it's unique to San Antonio, to South Texas, because we know that a lot of our students are coming from Laredo, and they're like, well, my family will always tell me that I speak the wrong Spanish, and they leave it. They don't want to speak Spanish because of that situation. We're really looking for activities for creating a community where students can claim what they have and push it on instead of leaving it behind to speak the correct Spanish. That sometimes in the second language, it's based on the Spanish from Spain. It's based on Spanish from Latin America, from a professional or from a standard context that really doesn't connect to how we speak Spanish in Texas, in San Antonio, for instance. And those are some of the main aspects that we're basing it on in the current courses.
And I think, Stephanie, what Sylvia was talking about, you know, almost a sense of shame that a lot of Latinos have about how much Spanish they do or they don't speak. Speaking about myself, I mean, I'm Spanglishing all the time because there are certain words that I can't figure out in Spanish in my head. So I'm going back and forth, for example, when I'm talking with my mother. But if I ever have to speak Spanish to somebody who is more fluent, I will feel more uncomfortable. And I'm sure that so many of the students in these courses have that sense of almost shame, like my Spanish is just not good enough. This is the way that I was taught to speak Spanish, or maybe I don't speak Spanish at all because my parents or my grandparents did not think that Spanish was going to help me succeed. So you've got this whole cultural obstacle that so many of these Latinos have to deal with. And even the shame that comes upon them is from other Latinos themselves. You're not pronouncing this word correctly. You shouldn't call yourself a Hispanic. It seems like students and young people and other people who are Latinos, they just don't have that sense of confidence in their own culture.
Right. And everything that you're saying really resonates a lot with the stories that I've heard my students discuss in the classroom. And typically, I like to start the class talking about my own linguistic background and history, being really vulnerable and sharing with them that I have 3 degrees in Spanish. I grew up exposed to Spanish. My grandmother was the first person to teach me Spanish, and I know all the rules, and I can explain to you why this grammar point is like this. Where did the accents go? But I feel ashamed sometimes as well. I lack confidence in my own abilities. So if that's how I feel, knowing that these things exist, like I can't imagine sometimes how other students might feel not having this maybe deeper understanding of why those things happen, right? And we talk a lot about not just feeling maybe that their grandparents or parents wouldn't teach them Spanish because they didn't think that it would be something that would be successful for them in the future, but because they were physically punished for using Spanish, right? So you carry that linguistic trauma, right? That generational trauma. And what does that mean to kind of lose that language and lose that identity? And, you know, your language is part of who you are. It's part of your identity. And when you lose those things in your family, you lose a part of yourself. So a lot of what we talk about in the classroom is that understanding, right? That historical connection. We share our stories. And nobody has to, right? It's all really if they want to. And a lot of times they do want to because they've never talked about those stories before in a classroom. And because that is how our curriculum is designed. And what I really love about our program is that we have classes for beginning level students who are typically referred to as receptive bilinguals. So they can understand Spanish, but they have maybe some challenges speaking it, either because they lack the confidence or because typically when someone speaks to them in Spanish, they respond in English or in Spanglish. And then we have more advanced courses, right, for some of our bilingual students who maybe have different motivations for using their Spanish. And what I love about what we do in our program is that we get to know our students. In the very first weeks of classes, we have one-on-one meetings with them to understand, why are you taking this course? What do you want to do with your Spanish? Do you just want to be able to order tacos in the taco truck line? Because that's going to be really different from somebody who wants to use it maybe for professional purposes. So if we as instructors know what our students want, then we can build the class, bringing a little bit of this and a little bit of that, building that into the curriculum. And really, we share our stories and our insecurities, like linguistically, to be a model for them, to show them that it's okay. It's okay to have those struggles, and it's okay to really reflect on those feelings, and for them to be the people who get to decide how they want to move forward with their languages and defend their own linguistic choices. I think that that is really the overarching goal, right, of our program. When somebody says to them, you're not saying this correctly, that's not the word that we use, that's Spanglish, that's Tex-Mex. Well, they can say, well, hey, this is the reason why, this is the historical background. I learned this in class, you know, I'm defending my own choices, and this is how I want to talk because this represents me.
Stephanie Gonzalez is director of the Spanish as a Heritage Language Program at the University of Texas at San Antonio. We're also talking to Silvia Fernandez, Assistant Professor of Digital and Public Humanities in the Spanish as a Heritage Language Program. When we come back, Heritage Spanish students are taught to embrace the informal style of language they've always known.
We have seen more people understanding the importance of really honoring what students bring to the classroom instead of fixing their Spanish or giving them something that is this correct, standardized version of Spanish.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Latinos who are not fluent in Spanish or who are somewhat fluent but are not comfortable with their level of expertise are sometimes maligned by their fellow Latinos. Younger Latinos who fall in this category call themselves no sabo kids.
No sabo kids be like,
tú no sabes hablar español.
¿Cómo que no? Yo sí sabo hablar español.
No sabo.
Stop, it's not funny.
No sabo kids are all over the internet sharing personal stories and tips on how to get by if they have to turn on the Spanish.
This is how to survive a family reunion, being a no sabo kid. Remember the words, ¿cómo estás? They will carry you throughout the entire reunion because you will be meeting dozens of people who you've never met or seen before in your life. Pero they all have one thing in common, your mom's Facebook page. So when your tía or tío walks in, you're going to look them dead in the eyes and say, hola tía, ¿cómo estás? Followed by a bunch of besos.
A lot of these no sabo kids are really heritage learners. They've grown up with a personal connection to Spanish at home and with their friends. A program at the University of Texas at San Antonio, Spanish as a Heritage Language, caters to these heritage learners. It's not a typical Spanish class. Proper grammar is not the goal. We're talking today with two professors in the program, Stephanie Gonzalez, the program's director, and Silvia Fernandez. Fernandez explains how students use their own personal experiences to inform the course.
How we're shaping a lot of these courses, it's to put behind the grammatical lessons and bring in a lot of the cultural, historical, social aspects. Then students get assigned to record their family history. They're practicing the past tense, but it's not you're going to learn how to say the past tense in this way, and these are the grammatical ways to say it, because then they block themselves. They're like, no, I can do this, because they know already. They know how to say a lot of those words, but when it's in a very standard way, in a very academic way of saying those things, they're always like, no, I cannot do it. I'm not going to pronounce it in that way. But when you bring them with their family histories, when they go and interview and they start seeing even the varieties of words that their family members will say things in different ways, they start seeing that they know it. Generational aspects, historical aspects that are present through the language. Every model has an aspect of culture, of history, of social issues. Also, another aspect of how we're shaping a lot of these classes is to really, in some way, recover the local histories and the local knowledges that it's here in San Antonio, that it's in Texas, that sometimes has been not included in the curriculum because that's not academic enough, or that's from Latin America, but it's part of our history. A lot of the literature of Mexican American, Chicanos, Borderlands has been mostly taught in English. And in our courses, we're bringing a lot of that literature, a lot of history, culture from Mexican Americans, from Chicanos, that San Antonio has. So one example is, for instance, in one model, we started looking at our community heroes. And Jovita Hidar was there. So they learned that Jovita Hidar had these escuelitas to teach Spanish and to foster that within their Mexican-American communities. And that's where students start seeing how the language is embedded through our communities but has always been in some way invisible or marginalized to have the English as the dominant language. So those are part of how our courses are designed. We're also bringing a lot of digital humanities, which is how students can connect their local histories using digital technologies, because also the internet, it's always represented either in the standard Spanish or English. We have a lot of students that are in computer science, in data science, pursuing the careers of engineering, how they can also question the language, but the language that they hold and that their families hold to create technological platforms that represent their family members.
So heritage Spanish, it seems to be sort of this new embrace that you're starting to see academically of the non-Spain formal Spanish. You're seeing Spanglish also being seen as an academic focus, and now heritage Spanish. How difficult was it, do you think, for some of these institutions, UTSA obviously being very open to these ideas, but have you seen efforts maybe stall in other institutions of higher education because they don't really see it as worthy? How have you seen sort of the development of this type of academic focus change in the last few years?
Oh, that's a great question. I feel like it has so much history because we've in the country, we've had heritage courses, you know, in different names and titles, probably since the 70s. So there is a long history of it in just certain areas of the country where you've either had scholars who have really been invested in that work, or maybe the student population was sufficient enough to have the classes that could make. And we've had different waves throughout Spanish as a heritage language education. And really, I would say in the past 15 years, as long as I have kind of been a student and now professor, and I've seen through my own, I guess, experiences how heritage Spanish has changed. For example, I didn't know what a heritage learner was until I got to grad school. I didn't know that there was a different term. I thought that everybody just took Spanish courses and that you maybe had a background in Spanish or maybe that you didn't, but I didn't realize that there was a whole different field. I'm originally from Ohio, and so it wasn't until I got to the border that I realized there was this difference and this distinction. And really what I'm seeing is that students are more familiar with the understanding that there is a difference, I think, than maybe 15 or 20 years ago. So the field is emerging a little bit more. People are having a little bit more understanding of what it means. We are also kind of connecting it with pop culture. So for example, if you've heard of the term a no sabo kid, a lot of our students can identify with that term, especially the students in our first courses. Because in our first class, really, the whole goal of the course is to get them to use their Spanish and use their languages. So we do a lot of oral dialogues. We do a lot of them recording themselves kind of talking. Sometimes they'll be reading something that they have written. Sometimes they'll just be talking about something familiar. And other times it might be preparing something that's more formal so that they can get different experiences using their language. I think a lot of times the challenges are that there are, and maybe not so much anymore, but I can kind of think about my experiences in college in a Spanish department where my professors were all from other countries. So maybe they were from Latin America, maybe they were from Spain. And I never had an instructor that grew up in the U.S. and spoke U.S. Spanish. So I didn't have that experience probably until maybe grad school or when I was in my PhD that I actually saw other people in the classroom teaching Spanish that were heritage learners or heritage speakers of Spanish. I think as more and more people embrace, right, U.S. Spanish and see it as real Spanish, right, because there is this idea that it's not real because it's contaminated by English, right? Or that's the same thing as Tex-Mex, right? You don't speak good one or the other. Then we have seen more people understanding the importance of really honoring what students bring to the classroom instead of fixing their Spanish or giving them something that is this correct, standardized version of Spanish, right? There's this article I read recently. It says you can't fix what's not broken. So it's the idea of seeing them as whole, right? As they are. It doesn't need to be replaced. But they are the ones who kind of get to choose what they want to do in the future, right? So if they want to acquire maybe a certain register because they want to go travel, like it's kind of really in their hands, right? So it's really kind of taking it from the hands of the instructor to say, this is the only Spanish that you can use. This is the only way that you can use it, to saying, hey, no, you get to choose. Let's kind of take it and make it student-centered. Let's build up the confidence that you have. Let's get them speaking and using it. And understanding the cultural and historical aspects of this so that they can make those informed decisions in the future and use their Spanish the way that they want to.
A lot of students are not any more interested in taking language and literature courses. So we're seeing a lot of programs that are disappearing from the universities and heritage. A lot of students that are, they're like, I'm native. I know Spanish. I always use it. I don't need Spanish courses. In the heritage program, it's not only learning language, it's learning all that surrounds the language. And in that connection, it's also creating professionals that will be aware of how to use their profession in the different regions, in the different communities they're at, instead of fostering discrimination because they speak in some way the Spanish that they have in that community. So that's so important within the program that we are building. It's from to create citizens, to create professionals that are connected to these different Spanishes, instead of pushing for the whole city to speak in some way, because that's not possible. So a lot of our approaches, it's in a social justice approach on how language can be discriminatory, can foster sexism, and ways to prevent that. So that's something so important to start, that these courses are also making students think about social structures, power structures that have in some way control the language differences or the language divisions between different communities.
Well, we've already seen sort of growth in this program at UTSA in the last couple of years. What are each of your dreams to see this program evolve into? And Celia, I'll start with you.
I'm from Ciudad Juarez, El Paso, and I was one of those that I was like very sure I was a native speaker because I did my elementary in Juarez. And then I went to El Paso, and it was until when I was doing my PhD that I was doing my dissertation, and one professor was like, you don't know how to write. You don't know how to write in Spanish. And I was questioning myself. I was like, how come I don't know how to write if that's my first language? And I started seeing that I will combine. I do that all the time. I combine the structure from writing in Spanish with how I speak and how I listen to English. So that caused me a trauma. When they're like, well, you need to write an article about this. I'm like, no. It makes me question myself. And I hope that this program can push for more students to open spaces where they belong to instead of not being part of it because of the language. I hope that a lot of the graduate students that we have can continue their graduate school and then they can implement the heritage, how they teach it, how they use it in their different professional spaces within their communities without shame, without trauma, but also to keep this change. I think heritage not only belongs to academia, it belongs in our houses. How can you start talking with your grandma and telling her, grandma, if you tell my niece that she doesn't speak the correct Spanish, you're going to make her lose the language. How can our students also pass that lessons that are learning in classes and create a more safe space of using the different varieties of language? I hope that could be possible and we can take what we are teaching in the classroom outside to make a better world.
Kind of echoing what Silvia was saying, we're definitely growing now into the community. This semester, I'm teaching a course on community service learning, and we're connecting with different partnerships throughout the community in education, in social justice issues as well. And I would really love to see us growing, right, in our work within the local San Antonio community, having students getting their families involved, really kind of giving back in a way and kind of continuing to not just be something that happens in the classroom, right, but outside the classroom as well.
And Silvia, one of the community outreach programs that you all are working with is the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center. They, speaking of social justice, they are very much involved in social justice and preservation here in the San Antonio region. Can you tell us a little bit about how this program is working with Esperanza?
With the Esperanza, they also have a lot of archives about the history of the center, about the communities that form part of it. And one of the ideas is to start facilitating workshops with community members and students to learn how to create these digital archives and represent them in the language that their communities speak instead of a formal standard language that nobody is going to be interacting with those digital archives. So that's one of the examples to start connecting community and students to create these digital archives and then also present them in public exhibits with the El Museo del West Side.
So our students are going to be working with the Museo del West Side, specifically looking at some community interviews. So the idea is for students to transcribe the interviews in three different versions. One that would be all Spanish, one that would be all English, and then one that's representative of the interview, however it is actually stated. So if they use Tex-Mex or if they use Spanglish, to be like representative of what is actually said.
Sort of the literal translation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that those can be used and accessed, right, by the community. We also have the Westside Community Center. A lot of our students are going to be working also as digital ambassadors. So they're serving the needs of the community who need help, maybe filling out applications online. Maybe they don't have access to a computer or they only have their phone that can get internet. So they need some help doing different things in an online capacity and they don't maybe have those skills, right? So they can go in. And a lot of times these are some of our older generations that might need a little bit more support. So we're really excited to grow those partnerships and to be hosting more community events, right? That's the goal, to kind of build on those partnerships, keep them going, and host events in the future where we are doing that work. So recently, my students who are in that community service learning class decided that instead of writing final papers, they want to organize an event. So that's what we're going to be doing for our final.
Hey, I don't know. Is that cheating?
Well, actually, it's funny because, community work and organizing and event planning, I feel like is more work than writing a paper. So maybe I tricked them a little bit.
I wanted to add about another community work that students are doing, specifically a lot of our research assistants. Some of them are working with community engaged digital humanities projects, and some of these students are working in a project about gender violence and feminicides in the Ciudad Juarez, El Paso, the Paso del Norte region. And a lot of these students are going to be helping working with Casa Amiga, who is a human rights organization in Ciudad Juarez, to learn how to digitize a lot of the newspapers that they have since the 90s and start creating metadata that could be in different languages so that it could be studied but also understood as a transborder, transnational issue that both countries can help and can start looking for strategies to prevent this violence. Other students are working with migrant communities, and through the different classes that we have been offering, they have been learning how to map. And they're mapping a lot of the instances where migrants confront violence when crossing or when they're already here in the United States. So they will be creating bilingual maps to also be aware of the spaces that are creating this violence or that support a lot of migrant communities. And I think that's also so important of how our heritage language see how they can work with a lot of this social issues work, because they have lived sometimes those experiences or their family members have been facing that. So it's more familiar and could make a more impactful change within those projects.
Silvia Fernandez is an assistant professor of digital and public humanities in the Spanish as a Heritage Language program at the University of Texas at San Antonio. We're also talking with Stephanie Gonzalez, director of the Spanish as a Heritage Language program. Thanks for joining us today on Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Maria Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.